Welcome to the current and future role of PARP inhibition in the management of prostate cancer. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. Our distinguished faculty of Drs. Neeraj Agarwal, Emmanuel Antonarakis, and Oliver Sartor present valuable slide presentations in the other part of the CME program, but here the three investigators met, as we so often do nowadays, virtually through the miracle of teleconferencing that also has instantly permeated patient care during the COVID-19 pandemic. In our roundtable discussion, I asked the faculty to elaborate more on what was discussed in their presentations and to present instructive cases from their practices. To begin, I asked Dr. Antonarakis to comment on how he sees the current use of genomic testing and PARP inhibitors in clinical practice and where things are likely to head in the near future.
I think first we must remember and point out to the audience that PARP inhibitors are not FDA approved for any scenario in prostate cancer right now. So their use is still investigational. We all expect that within the next 3 to 6 months, at least one PARP inhibitor may become FDA approved for castration-resistant metastatic prostate cancer in the second or third line and beyond. In other words, for patients who have received chemical castration plus one or more of the novel antiandrogens, plus or minus one taxane chemotherapy. So that is the population where we expect the FDA approval to come. At least in my practice, when I see a patient with metastatic prostate cancer, if they have no genomics performed, first thing I do on the initial consultation is I send a germline test and I use any tumor that I can to do a somatic test. And that's not necessarily because I'm going to act on it right away. To answer your question more specifically, in the first line systemic therapy setting, I typically would not use a PARP inhibitor, or I may not even use the information about a BRCA2 test in that scenario. But I like to know that information to plan for the future. As we know, almost all of these patients, if not all, will develop castration-resistant prostate cancer in 2 to 3 years after starting their first systemic hormonal therapy. And at that moment in time, I may decide to use an investigational PARP inhibitor on a clinical trial. Outside of a clinical trial, the off-label use of PARP inhibitors, I have done that infrequently, but sometimes I have. And typically, it will be the third or fourth line CRPC setting.
Oliver, so from that point of view, when you look at PARP inhibitors in the situation that Emmanuel described with castrate-resistant disease after primary endocrine therapy and a taxane, is that the way you would have liked to use it right now?
Thank you for the question, Neil. And yes, I would like to have the PARP inhibitors available now. We've been using them to some extent off clinical trial through compassionate use. And actually, the olaparib has been available to some patients for compassionate use. I think that the post-AR synthesis inhibitor or novel AR inhibitor agent, kind of post-abiraterone, enzalutamide setting, is one where we're considering it now and where we have used it now. I think as the FDA approvals will come in, it'll be in that second-line CRPC setting initially, and the taxane will be plus or minus. If we look, for instance, at the large olaparib phase 3 trial, did not require a taxane. And if we look at the rucaparib trial, you know, did not necessarily require a taxane. The PDUFA dates are coming up pretty soon. The first PDUFA date that I'm aware of will be in May. And so we could actually get a designation even in May of this year. I'm interested in using the agents. I have used the agents. They're unequivocally active in a subset of the HRR mutations, but not all. I think one of the things we need to sort out a little bit better is exactly where the activity is going to be seen. BRCA2, yes. And for ATM, not so much. The ability to look at a variety of other the HRRs, CDK12, for instance, not so active. So we need to be able to dissect these mutations individually and not consider them as a class, in my opinion.
So, Neeraj, I'm curious about your thoughts about this.
I think these drugs are going to be very exciting to use in my clinic. So oral pills, easy to monitor, easy for the patients, less visits to the hospital. If olaparib and rucaparib are available in my clinic, I'm going to use them for my patients who are harboring those DNA repair defects, especially with BRCA2 and BRCA1.